And we're back. It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Last week, we took the show on the road to Janice Ann's Fashions, and we appreciate them for standing with us. This week, we're back in the studio for an exciting hour where we're going to have a conversation with the Executive Vice President of Crisis Pregnancy Centers of Greater Phoenix in Arizona. And we're going to be talking with Raul Reyes about life and about their clinic and about everything that's going on around the country and around the world. So welcome to the show, Raul.
Thank you, Andrew. It's really, really exciting to be with you. Thanks for the great work you're doing in Knoxville.
Thank you. So right now, you're in Arizona, so it's like 2 o'clock in the morning or something. I'm not real good with time zones.
It's something like that. Yeah. Well, it's 2. You got the 2 o'clock right part. It's 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
Here.
So thanks for joining. I know that, you know, work has kind of ended here for most, but in Arizona, y'all are still working. So I appreciate you taking some time out to join me to talk about life, to talk about what's going on there in Arizona. And I think it's important that some people may be wondering, well, why are you talking to someone from Arizona? But I think it's important that pregnancy centers like yours there in Arizona and ours here in Knoxville join together and have these conversations and look to see the life movement kind of join hands and stretch across this country.
You know, we have to understand that we are part of a concerted effort, and that concerted effort comes from the Lord. So we are absolutely, you know, like, you know, platoons in, under the same army and under the same general, and we all are absolutely dealing with the same enemy. So
we've got to be in
concert with each other.
Well, that's awesome. Well, again, I appreciate you joining me. I think, but the way I would like to start is just kind of tell us about you, what got you involved. I know you've been involved in life work for quite a while. So what kind of got you into this world? And then what also, you know, talk about your family. Just kind of tell us a little bit about you.
Sure, real quickly. So I was running a Christian bookstore back then. It was called Zondervan. Now I think they're called Family Bookstores. And read a book by a Swiss theologian called Francis Schaeffer called Whatever Happened to the Human Race. And that book just blew my mind, because for the first time I really came to understand that there was an assault going on against human beings, and that there was a sanctity of life battle going on. We happened to be pregnant with our first child, our first of five, and so the fact that my wife was carrying a baby that was around 12 weeks along, and that so many babies in the United States their lives are ended in the womb right at that same time, it just really, really, really struck my heart. And I just felt that, you know, well, it was the beginning of a life's calling, and that's when it started for both me and my wife. Soon after that, we helped start a pregnancy center, which we ran for 14 years in Florida. And from there, we ended up working with an international Sanctity of Life ministry, where I traveled the world teaching and helping to start pregnancy centers. And we there was a couple of other stints in Colorado, where we ran a pregnancy center there for 10 years and worked for Focus on the Family. And now doing the same work in Phoenix with a dear friend that was my mentor when we very, very first started. So we've kind of come full circle.
Right, and Crisis Pregnancy Center of Greater Phoenix was founded in 1982
by David and Joanne Everett. Yeah.
Right, it's one of the largest and most comprehensive centers in the nation. I mean, you have four clinics there in the Phoenix area. So talk a little bit about that, operating in terms of four different locations and the need for that there in the Phoenix area.
Well, Phoenix is a sprawl. It's just a huge city. It could take you could easily take over an hour, maybe an hour and a half to go from one end to the other. So it's really made up of a number of smaller cities, but they all kind of go from one to the other. So we've got pregnancy centers located in each one of the four primary cities, Glendale, Phoenix, Mesa, and Tempe. And we situate them in an area of maximum impact, closest to universities, close to high schools, close to the demographics of the women who we serve. And so then there's an overlap of those four centers. So between those four centers, we really are dealing with the majority of the population in Phoenix, and Phoenix is the sixth largest city in the United States. So this is, even though you don't think of Phoenix as an urban environment, it really is an urban ministry in a major U.S. city.
Right, and I think it's important that listeners understand that this work, yeah, I think sometimes, and I want to talk a little bit later about some stereotypes that get thrown our way, but sometimes folks have concerns or stereotypes about those that are pro-life. And what y'all are doing there in Arizona and what we're doing here at Hope Resource Center in Knoxville is we are in a legitimate medical clinic. I mean, we are serving the medical needs of so many people that society has kind of pushed to the side. And we're doing that without caring really about their insurance situation, their background. I mean, we're just saying you come in our doors, you're going to be served well at no charge. And we're going to love you well, and you're not only going to get your physical needs met, your medical needs met, but we also can then come alongside and assist with spiritual needs and emotional needs and those conversations as well.
Yeah, it really is a unique ministries that are, first of all, Christ-centered. Second of all, just like you said, completely professional, medical directors, fully licensed doctors, fully licensed nurses, operating in absolutely beautiful facilities with all of our services absolutely free. That's just absolutely unique. And women, when they walk in our doors, they're treated, well, the way that we understand who they are, and that is that they're a child of God. So they're treated with so much dignity and honor and respect. A lot of our clients come from working poor, and they're really not, you know, they use a lot of government services that are, you know, to help supplement, you know, sure, their situation. And then they're used to not being treated, you know, with the dignity and honor and love and respect. And that's exactly what they get here. So for most people who attack pregnancy centers have either never come to a pregnancy center or have just such a skewed view and have such a determined view that they will only promote one choice, and that choice being abortion. And so anyone who doesn't promote their choice then must become their enemy and must be attacked, and so therefore they slander the good work of pregnancy centers.
Right. And, you know, I was talking with someone the other day, and they were asking, well, do y'all take donations as far as clothes, and what type of clothes do you take? And I told them, I said, you know, we'll take brand new clothes. I mean, our patients are, most of the time, they've received seconds, maybe thirds, their entire life. And what we want to do is we want to show them that they matter and show them that they're worthy of our love and worthy of our best, which is why we have nurse practitioners and nurses and professionally licensed folks working with them, because they deserve our best.
Yeah, the so many of the, especially the larger CPCs, but even the smaller ones, they do such a good job with offering wonderful material. And like you said, you know, the cribs are new, the strollers are new, the clothes are new, and you know, the boutiques that we have for the women, they look like, you know, a nice store. And
right.
And of course, so many of us have a program where the women don't just walk in and off the street and grab something, but they actually earn it by learning information that makes them good moms and good you know, mothers and good wives and family members, and we educate in so many ways, material that they're going to use for the rest of their life, and as a result, then they earn the money, the clothes that they're going to be using for their children, and they're also gaining valuable lifetime experience and wisdom.
And speak to that for a second. I'm sure y'all offer some type of parenting class for your patients, or you've at least have had experience with that. What is the importance of, you know, one thing that we stress here is our pro-life stance doesn't stop at the womb. So if we're going to be pro-life, then that means after baby comes, we continue that pro-life. And it also means that we're not just baby ministries. And I think sometimes that's a stereotype that gets thrown our way. My blog tomorrow is going to discuss how semantics matter. So we need to worry about the language that we're using as pro-life people, that we're not solely focused on babies. Now, babies are important, certainly, but so are moms and so are dads and so are families. So talk a little bit about what y'all have done and seen work in terms of education and celebrating mom and dad through education to prepare them to be the parents that God's called them to be.
Sure. And actually, in Arizona, there's a lady here who lives in Sholo, which is who created a program that is now used not only all over the United States, but all over the world. And it's called Earn While You Learn. And it's the program.
Absolutely.
I was talking about, where you can learn information. You can come in once a week. Some people come in once every other week. There's a program for women. There's a program for men. There's aspects of it that have to do with child development and fetal development and, you know, what you expect as you're expecting, and then there's, it goes on after you have your child. And it really teaches you not only how to be a mom, but it teaches you how to be a dad. It teaches you how to be a husband. So really what we're doing is building healthy families. You know, so many of the, especially, again, the working poor that we see, have had little or no role models, healthy role models. What does it look like? What does it look like for a husband to truly love, honor, and respect his wife? What does it look like for a wife to love and honor her husband? And so often what they're seeing around them is just relationships that kind of go from relationship to relationship to relationship based upon emotions and based upon hurts and wounds and addictions. And it's just not anything that they've ever seen modeled in a healthy manner. So here they can come and learn from people who are themselves living in a healthy and successful relationship, marriage relationship, and they become mentors. And so it's a program, again, free of charge, which is dealing with some of the most crucial issues that a man and woman can deal with, and that is, you know, how do you become a father? What does that mean? How do you become a husband, and what does that mean?
Right, and I think it's important that we stress that again. There's no charge to the patients that we're seeing. So when they walk in our doors, you know, I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, in reality, in terms of money, we actually lose money when our doors are open. If you look at it from a strict profit standpoint, which we're not for profit, but my goal is still to see more and more people. My goal is to see them come in our doors because I know they're going to get the best care. I know they're going to be loved. I know they're going to be served. I know that their interests are at hand, not anyone else's. And when they go to some other places, you know, abortion clinics and places out there that are going to prey on them and that are going to charge them and that are going to not be completely transparent or encourage them one way or the other. I think it's important to stress that clinics like yours there in Arizona and ours here in Knoxville are doing the work that so many choose not to do and are standing up and saying, we care deeply about you, and the money is not the driver. It isn't about revenue. It isn't about profit. The money that we raise, you know, the banquets and different things that we have, the money that we raise directly impacts the community that God's placed us in.
Yeah, and, you know, the medical facilities who survive by ending the life of children, they could no longer stay in business if women decided not to have an abortion. So their profit motive is driven by a need to sell a product just like anyone else, and their product is terminating the life of a child through abortion. We, on the other hand, we don't gain anything by whatever a patient of ours chooses to do. We don't gain any funds one way or the other. If they choose to have an abortion, you know, it certainly hurts us because, you know, there's a loss of life, but it hurts us because that woman has been hurt, and then we have services at that point to help her deal with her wounded heart. So not only, you know, do we not worry about winning or losing, we're here to benefit that woman, whatever she decides. We certainly hope that she'll make a life-affirming decision. But if she chooses to go with an abortion, we know that there are now a whole new issue of pain and concern and wounds that need to be dealt with. And we have programs and experts and services designed just to deal with her in that situation.
And I think it's amazing, you know, the longer that I spend in this work, you know, I watched it from afar for a time, and now that I'm in it, I'm amazed every single day at the staff and the people that have such a love for the patients and the people of this community and people that are supporting through donations, that are supporting through prayer, that are supporting through volunteering. So many different ways that they are impacting this community. Raul, we're going to be back in a second to talk more about life and the celebration of that. Join us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center, and I'm joined by the Executive Vice President of Crisis Pregnancy Centers of Greater Phoenix, there in Arizona, with Raul Reyes. So, Raul, we just talked about kind of what got you started in the life movement, what y'all are doing there in Arizona. I now want to shift gears just for a second to some legislation that's going on around the country, specifically there in California, right, real close to you and in some other parts, where we continue to see life devalued, not just at the first stage, at the abortion, but also at the last stage with doctor-assisted suicide. And we even, I just read an article today. There's a television show in prime time that just kind of celebrated doctor-assisted suicide and was talking about euthanasia. So we continue to see our society kind of dive in and slowly go to a place where life is being devalued. What would you say we need to do? What kind of would be your call to folks to be engaged in what is going on so that this slope wouldn't continue?
Wow, that's the question, isn't it? That's the million-dollar question right there. And, I think we always have to go back to the Word of God, and I think you always have to go back to Christ, because there really is no other solution. Education's not going to do it. We all want transformation. We all want to impact and transform our culture. If education by itself were sufficient, then we'd all be living in a heaven here on earth, right, where there wasn't hunger,
right.
And there wasn't, crime, and there wasn't abuse. But it's not. It's the only thing that can change behavior is a changed worldview, and a changed worldview comes from knowing Christ. And so, as Christians, I think sometimes it may seem like we're just always hitting the same old bell, and maybe it sounds so, so old-fashioned. But, I believe that Christ came to establish a church so that his truth and his word would be multiplied through the church to every corner of the world. And so, really, I believe it's a church, a living group of believers who are allowing themselves to be continuously transformed, first of all, individually, how we act in terms of what does it mean to be pro-life to my wife, to my children, to my family, to my neighbors. And then as a result of that, the impact really just goes out and starts impacting our community, our schools, our workplace. There really is nothing simpler or harder to do but to be like Christ and let that change transform ourselves and transform all we come in contact with. Now, of course, then I do believe that we then have impact in the world, and that means we have impact in the government, and we have all the different spheres that influence us, whether it be media and sports and all of these spheres. We can influence tremendously those spheres. We have... We have kind of pulled ourselves away from issues like, that's political. We can't do that. We can't deal with that. Well, if we leave a vacuum in the political arena, guess what? It's going to be filled up, and it's not going to be filled up by people of faith, by people whose values are based on the Word of God, by people whose actions reflect the belief that God's truth is how we should be acting. And so, I think we've done that, and so we lose time and time again. We lose at the Supreme Court, who then says, the taking of a child is a right, that marriage can be redefined, and that you can be born as a man and somehow change yourself into a woman. These things are they're just crazy and insane, but it's a reflection of the church not having the influence and the impact that she's supposed to have on our culture.
Right, and I think it starts with believers. Sometimes we see bad and we see sin and we see the culture kind of leaving and going the wrong direction. And sometimes what we do is we then just close our doors and close our blinds and act like nothing's going on. And we just say, well, I'm just going to worry about me and I'm just going to worry about my family. And what I believe we've been called to impact and to stand up in the culture. So examples would be like during the civil rights movement, so many people, so many believers, so many churches closed their blinds to their brothers and sisters being hosed down in the streets and being attacked by police dogs and just because of the color of their skin. And then we had, you can go back even further when you read stories of churches during the war and as Jews were being taken to slaughter and churches just saying, sing louder, play the music louder. And in closing their blinds. And what we have to do as believers is open those blinds and go, the Lord has placed us in this broken area for a purpose. And that purpose is to bring Christ to them. And so what we do is we then should be starting to engage in our society and having those conversations and not going about it with bitterness and with hate. As angry as Planned Parenthood and different things that they're doing, as angry as that makes me, my answer cannot be hate. My answer has to be, I want to see Cecile Richards' life transformed. I want to see the people that are working there. I want to see their lives transformed. I want to see them leave the abortion industry. You know, we had, and I thank you for praying with us during the Life Matters prayer initiative that we had a few weeks ago. But one thing that I got a message from Abby Johnson and her group that week, three people in 3 days left the abortion industry and reached out to Abby Johnson and her ministry, and then there were none. And they left the abortion industry. Now, I'm not saying that our prayer initiative made that happen. But what I do know is prayers work. And we have to, we can't truly celebrate life if we're not celebrating the life giver. And if we're not praying about everything that's going on and wanting to see a change in our society.
Yeah, well, John Piper, he really puts it into a simple form that whatever it is you want to accomplish, it's out of whack if you don't have Christ at the middle of it. It's always got to be the supremacy of Christ, whether it be relationships in a marriage or whether it be the sanctity of human life or whether we're wanting to see our government, you know, go back to a foundation of morality. You can't do it outside of Christ. So Christ has to be at the center of our universe, and then the planets will then go nicely around that center. But when you put anything else in the center, you're going to be out of whack. And so, yeah, and churches are not supposed to be some kind of a fortress where, you know, you're surrounded by a moat, and
right.
You pull up the drawbridge, and you try to somehow keep away the dangers. No, we're supposed to be knights. We're supposed to be like the men of Issachar, men who understood their times, you know, men who are willing to go out and put themselves out for the least of these, even if it means that we get hurt. I always like to ask that question: what would I have done if I lived in Nazi Germany?
Right.
You know, would I have dared to shelter as many as I could, realizing that if I got caught, I would be killed or sent to a concentration camp? Well, we're living today in a time that is really, in terms numerically at least, much worse. You know, there is a Holocaust that happens every day in every city in the United States and in every country on the earth, with 46 million abortions happening around the world.
If you're listening right now, wherever you're at, that is where the Lord put you. So whatever city you live in, if that is Knoxville, if that is Phoenix, if that is anywhere in between, anywhere around the world, that is where God has put you. So what are you doing? What are you doing to stand for all that is good? And that has to first start with your relationship with Christ. It has to start with praying and serving God. And then from that, something inside of us going, yeah, I'm not okay with what's going on. I'm going to stand. I'm going to be bold, regardless of what risk that may bring to me. And I think that's what I love about pregnancy centers. That's what I love about the life movement is there's a boldness in that. And even after Roe v. Wade and you had some people stand and say, this isn't okay, we have to stand, we have to do something, there was boldness in that. There was young people, there was old people, there was everything in between saying, we need to stand for life. And so this is a great conversation. We come back, we're going to talk about the life movement as a whole, where it's been, where it is now, and where we hope to see it go. Thanks for joining me, Raul. We'll be back in just a second.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. I'm joined by Raul Reyes, Executive Vice President of Crisis Pregnancy Centers of Greater Phoenix there in Arizona. We again appreciate you joining us today. Now what I want to do is talk about the life movement as a whole. So the pro-life movement as a whole, and the importance of it in terms of what is done for society, and also the, you know, right after Roe v. Wade, what we saw was a lot of people, a lot of churches, to be quite honest, kind of disengaged, and they, you know, because science really hadn't wasn't where it is now, certainly. And so there was about a 10-year, you know, 10 to 15-year gap of churches kind of disengaging, which gave the pro-choice and abortion folks some momentum. And now what we're seeing is we've been trying to overcome that. So what we had is we had so many years of, you know, like you talked about earlier, a Supreme Court saying that it is a right to take the life of an unborn child. So what that means is that means kids and people have been taught that. And so now they think that that is okay. And now we're no matter how much we argue for life, they can look at us and say, well, the Supreme Court said it's okay. And it is a right. So what have you seen with your involvement in the life movement in Florida, there in Arizona, in Colorado, and around the world? What have you seen kind of the growth and where it's come from and the positives of that? And then I want to talk about where we think it may be going.
Well, you know, when it first came out, you know, thank God for the Catholic Church, because they actually, even before Roe versus Wade, they were always there on the front lines standing up for life and speaking boldly in defense of unborn children. But it wasn't that long after Roe versus Wade, it was around 75, 76, 77, that pregnancy centers, evangelical pregnancy centers, started coming on the scene. And then by the middle of 1980s, it really took off. And it was an outreach. I mean, it really was an amazing expression of the church saying, we will no longer stand on the sidelines and allow this to go on, A, unchallenged, and B, without responding to it in a merciful and gracious and loving way. So while there were some responses that had to do with picketing and that kind of a thing inside of abortion clinics, the overwhelming response was the creation of locations where women could go, hear the truth, and be helped, and that's these pregnancy centers. So it really was an amazing response. There's over 2,300 pregnancy centers right now in the United States.
Right.
There's many, many more pregnancy centers than there are abortion clinics. And it's so the response was that the church, when given the opportunity to respond, it has responded. It has responded in a powerful in a transformational way, and there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of human beings who are alive today into their second and third and fourth generations because of the work of pregnancy centers. And this is not only in the United States, it is around the world. So it really is, when someone says, God, you're asking us what we do, what have we asked you, what have you done? And God would say, I have sent my bride to every community and every town and every nation to respond with love and compassion and practical and spiritual assistance. And so the bride of Christ has responded, and now we see young people. I know that a lot of people kind of get disappointed and think that where is our youth? Well, there are more young people involved right now than there ever have been in the sanctity of life and pro-life initiatives, and young, there's a tremendous number of young people who are saying, you know, it is our generation that has been killed, and we will no longer be silent. And there's that silent no more mentality. We will no longer stay silent while our brothers and sisters are being killed.
Yeah, and I think it's important to know. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get involved. You know, as a millennial, I've always been passionate about life, and so. I remember in my political days, you know, when I was deeply involved in politics, I would go around and I would talk to groups and I would say, I'm a Christian first, I'm a conservative second, and I'm a Republican third. That was my spiel, which sounds very good on the campaign trail. But what I began to understand is God was convicting me. And one day it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, well, you say these things, but what have you ever done to truly stand up for life? And so, you know, I immediately got engaged in looking for ways to get involved. And then I began to study and look at how other people had and how other churches had and what other people were doing to celebrate life. And then went to the CareNet conference in California and just got to see kind of the beginning and where they're at now and the transformation of the crisis pregnancy center and also the transformation of people in our society. So I think in the early days, there was a lot of shame and guilt, and so there was a lot of pregnancy centers open kind of in the you know, side streets and not out there in the open. And of course, it was all new to everybody. And what I think now we have is we have a, you know, with the medical clinic coming along with crisis pregnancy centers, is we're saying, no, we're going to operate as a medical clinic. We're going to have our professionals. And you know, not everybody has done that. Some are still doing, you know, some other things in which we need them as well. And so it's such an amazing movement to watch and how it's grown and just to see the impact that's been made across this country.
Yeah, and Andrew, you know, we've impacted the culture to the point where there was a time when, if you were pro-life, you know, you were looked at with scorn as if you were some kind of Neanderthal.
Right.
But in our most recent presidential debates in the Republican Party, you know, virtually every single candidate, and there was a lot of candidates up there,
yeah,
spoke, some of them, with amazing articulation about the pro-life cause. And we've had many other candidates in the past say they're pro-life, but I've never heard candidates for the highest office of the United States speak so passionately and so articulately about why they're pro-life and why the life of an unborn child is worth saving, defending, and protecting. Yeah. I was so happy with their performance.
Yeah, it's been, you know, Dr. Carson on Meet the Press Sunday was, you know, I was out of town this weekend, so I never watch Meet the Press. I never watch any of those Sunday shows, and I was out of town, so I was able to watch, and I watched his interview, and I was blown away at the boldness in his stance on pro-life. And they said, is there any exception? Is there anything that would make you kind of shift? And his answer was even more boldness, and he said, if someone from the pro-choice side can give me a good reason to take the life of a baby, and that was his language.
Yeah, to kill a baby.
To kill a baby, then I will hear, you know, and the fact that he used that language, and
right,
again, it goes back to semantics, and it's important that we use language not only celebrating life of the baby, but also understanding the importance of that mom, and what Dr. Carson has done, because he's a surgeon and he's operated to save lives as well. You know, it's really shown that it's okay. It's okay to be pro-life. And that's the thing that I stress to my staff all the time is, look, we need to be bold in our stance for life.
That's right.
And we do not need to be ashamed in telling people that we're pro-life. I remember there's been times where I've had conversations over dinner, and when it turns to life, everybody starts whispering. And we don't need to whisper. You know, our whispers need to turn to shouts, and we need to be bold in our stance for life.
And words do matter, and yes, it is a rather sensitive topic because
sure,
it can cause untold pain, emotional and psychological, to a person who has been involved in an abortion decision. So I think that there is a legitimate concern and a legitimate desire to speak in a way that is merciful. But at the same time, we have to be able to speak the truth. So speaking the truth in love becomes kind of a balancing act. I hardly ever say the word abortion without saying ending the life of a child by abortion.
Right.
Because when you just say abortion, it's kind of a euphemism, and you're somehow hiding behind this word, and the horror and the ugliness of what it means is slightly hidden. So I never say just, you know, that person had an abortion. I say, no, the life of a child was ended by an abortion. Or, you know, are you considering ending the life of your child by an abortion? And it is painful, but it's truth, and it hopefully it's truth that opens the eyes to the reality of the decision that you are considering making.
Right. We had a patient stop by last week, Thursday or Friday, and they brought in their 14-year-old daughter. And what they do is every single year to celebrate that daughter's birthday, they come to Hope because that is where the mom chose life. And they bring gifts for babies. They bring gifts for our store to give out to patients. And it's such a great picture of this family and this daughter now understanding my mom was at a tough spot. My mom was in crisis. But my mom chose to parent, and it's such a beautiful picture of redemption, and such a beautiful picture of life being chosen and dreams being chosen at the same time. I think so many times we have stereotypes thrown our way, so we you know, some people will call us right wing nut jobs, or we only care about babies. What are we going to do when all these babies are born? How are we going to take care of them? And my answer to all of that is go visit a place like Hope Resource Center. Go visit a place like Crisis Pregnancy Center is in Phoenix, and I'll show you what we're going to do. We're going to step up. We're going to offer education for the moms and dads. We're gonna follow up. We're gonna be there for them. And like you said earlier, even if mom chooses termination, we have a place for them, and we're going to love them and serve them, and we're not going to discard them like society does so many times.
And, you know, it's absolutely true that we do care so much about the child in the womb and outside of the womb. But I'm going to defend that even if we were just dealing with the child in the womb, that's legitimate. You know, when someone is working in the emergency room and they're trying to save a life, no one asks them, well, what are you going to do for this person after
Absolutely.
You do the surgery?
Good point.
Or, you know, people who are in military, they'll go hundreds of miles, fly helicopters, do an amazing search rescue mission to find someone who's wounded and then save their life. And no one says, well, are you going to take care of their family for the rest of their life? No. They're on a mission to save a life. That's their job. And so they're really, we don't have to be defensive about the fact that, yeah, we are at a point of life and death. And yes, right now we're trying to save a life and prevent a huge, huge harm to occur to a mother who may make a decision that she may regret for the rest of her life. Now, will we help after that? Absolutely. But are we somehow less or to be attacked or blamed if we don't? No, there's a legitimate and a very worthwhile job to do in saving that person's life and in helping that mother.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I think it's important to see. I believe right now we're on the cusp of something amazing with the recent videos concerning Planned Parenthood, and another video was released today, and so many things, and presidential candidates talking about it. I mean, I think we really are on the cusp of something amazing happening in this country for life and for the life movement.
And then, of course, whenever there's movement forward, then the enemy attacks, and we have to realize that we can never rest, because, as we can see in California, the governor there has just signed a bill forcing pregnancy centers to basically give information about how to have an abortion to all of their clients, and if they don't happen to have a licensed medical doctor, they have to put that sign up, and they told them how many points. It's got to be some huge sign, and certainly the intention of that governor and those people who are against what we do defending life is to close down every pregnancy center. I mean, it is their stated intention, and it is their desire to see pregnancy centers go away.
Yeah, there's no question. When we come back, Raul, we're going to talk about your latest project to help the church in celebrating life. We'll be back in a sec. We're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. I'm joined by Executive Vice President Raul Reyes from Phoenix, Arizona. Right now, Raul, I want to talk about some work that you've been doing. You've put a lot of time in over the past few years, I think, on some resources for the church. And I think what we need to understand and what you really do well in speaking about is We are there to come alongside the church. We are not the bride. The church is the bride, and we're there to celebrate that and help out as we can. And I think a lot of what you're doing is going to help them and help connect us with the church.
I'm just convinced that the Lord has a plan A, and there is no plan B. And that plan A is the church. We are an outreach of the church. The pregnancy centers are, and so is every ministry that exists around the world is an outreach of the bride. But too many nonprofits see the church as a place where we can get people to pray for us, people to support us financially, and people to volunteer. And then we have these wonderful resources that we create for the world. You know, we have abstinence programs and feeding programs, and I thought, well, what about the bride? What about the church? Isn't there a need there? And this sanctity of human life issue is very complex in that the rejection of the sanctity of human life and a corresponding decrease in respect for sexual integrity has resulted in so many consequences, including unplanned pregnancies and STDs and broken hearts and sexual addictions and divorce and abuse. And so much of that goes on in the bride. So the bride, which is supposed to be salt and light, is in many ways dealing with the shadow of the sinfulness of the world casting itself upon the churches in our community. So we are. I've created resources. Initially, it was a resource that I created along with friends in an international ministry in Grand Rapids that we traveled around the world teaching pastors about the sanctity of human life. That's called Journey of a Life Giver, and I've just recently completed a new curriculum for churches in the United States called the Life Giving Church, and it's 10 sessions. And it starts with the Word of God as foundation and goes into worldview and how worldview should impact us. And it gets into the role of men and the role of women and then the role of the family. Talks about Satan, our adversary, and about the fall and how that impacts us. Talks about the role of the church. And it talks about the attack against the sanctity of human life and the attack against biblical sexuality and what are the consequences of that. And then here's where we find ourselves, and then how do we respond to that? And there really is no entity on earth. There is no government. There is no school. There is nothing that exists that can possibly respond to the attack against life, to the attack against our sexuality. There's no entity but the bride. There is nobody but the church that can do it. And yet, matters of sexuality, which when abused have caused so much pain and harm, you know, we kind of are embarrassed to talk about it. And we certainly, sanctity of human life, well, that's a topic we brush up once a year in January. On January 22nd, we might talk about it. These are issues that are being attacked in these areas 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's devastating the Christian community and Christian families. And we've got to wake up, and we've got to get in that ring, and we've got to use the prophetic, anointed, Holy Spirit-filled voice that the Lord has given us. He said, the bride, the gates of hell will not prevail against my bride, against the church. Well, we need to reclaim that authority and stand in that authority and speak in that authority. And that, you know, in black and white, it means dealing with our own sinfulness, you know, bearing each other's burdens, confessing our sins one to another, being a community so that in community we can, you know, exhibit all of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, be a holy community, and then start the transformation not only of ourselves and our families, but our communities. But it all comes from an equipped, encouraged, resourced church, which has taken this responsibility seriously and is willing to speak boldly about an issue that no one else can speak to as well as the bride.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that what this is doing is it's equipping pastors. It's equipping the church. That pastors have so many things on their plates that they're thinking about. They're thinking about budgets. They're thinking about mission trips. They're thinking about different ministries all throughout the church. And for us to now come to them and say, look, we know you're pro-life. We know you celebrate life. All we want to do is come alongside and help you equip your people to then go out and do the same. And it's such a great opportunity for us. I mean, you and I and other folks like us meet with so many pastors and so many churches. And this is such a great opportunity to do that. So Raul, we have about a minute left. Where can, is there a website? Is there a way to find that? Or is that coming in the near future?
They can reach me at 719-459-5222, or they can probably contact you and ask.
Absolutely.
You know, ask you. But yeah, we have a ministry we're launching called Life Equip. All of our services and resources are going to be free to the church. We're in the process of launching that right now, so you're catching me at the very, very beginning.
Perfect.
So the website, God willing, by next month. But we are really, really excited. We have some great people who have really invested their life in sharing this message with the bride and are going to be available for the bride.
Awesome, Raul. Well, thanks for joining me today. That's Raul Reyes, Executive Vice President, Crisis Pregnancy Centers, Greater Phoenix. We really appreciate you taking some time out and having this conversation. We're going to post this online tomorrow for those of you that want to share it. And Raul, if you want to share it with some folks, you're welcome to do that. Thanks again for joining us. We'll be back next week, same time, here every Tuesday.